Hallo, Sirs.
Good evening, madam. I hope I'm not disturbing your breakfast.
Hello, people, and welcome to our regular Wednesday stream.
This is our George Adigadidwango Appreciation Hour.
Yes, for those who were not here on Monday, you'd be excused because we didn't stream on Monday. We
Yes.
put up a quick announcement, a proper announcement video for Nomos Manchester 2. Nomos Boogaloo.
We should have used that as an opportunity to trick the audience there. We could have asked the people in the comments if they were on the stream on Monday and then
People all
gaslight
assumed.
them into thinking there was one when there wasn't.
No, there was not a Monday stream. Don't worry, you didn't miss out. But we did do a proper announcement, kind of video and slight discussion about Nomos Manchester 2, which I guess brings us neatly onto our normal waffle and shilling, because there is a link down to our in-person event stuff below,
Yep.
along with all our other links. We'll be hosting that on the 27th of May.
Yes.
And yeah, if you're in the UK, feel free to check that out, because we try and offer, we like to think, half decent value at least for those, because we try to do them at cost. So,
A good weekend will be had by all, and hopefully we get to see you there. And as you say, we shall do the usual, thank the people that turn up to the stream, the members who pay.
yes, I can see that already S. Smith and Anthony Keane in the chat there, two of our members. If you do want to support us, the best way to do it is through, well, it's through PayPal at the moment, unfortunately, because we're still trying to set up other stuff. I almost said the Streamlabs there, but we've kind of disabled that because it's not been working properly, really. I'm tasking you next week with getting a StreamYard, or not StreamYards, a Stream Elements or an Entropy or whatever set up.
I will get an entropy thing set
Yes.
up next week.
Because Streamlabs are shit, to be honest. They are not good.
It is the big doo-doo.
But yes,
But yes, we are monetized, so if people don't want to do that, they can super chat and super sticker and whatnot if they feel that we deserve it, which I think we do.
yeah, we try and disable like everything apart from display ads, which you can't disable. So we allow donations, but we try and keep ads off. In fact, I had a video that when we put up the video with Rex and I reading Law about the legalities of Hope Not Hate and other NGOs, I left the default monetization on by accident, and it put in like seven mid-rolls. It was awful. I had to
I
go in
see
and change them.
Anthony Keenan chat says, any room for a thickle at Nomos? It's okay. The secret is we're all retarded.
That's my secret. I'm always retarded.
Don't tell anyone though.
Yeah, don't tell. Yeah, it's a secret between me and everyone watching. Now, our theme today, as you will see by the thumbnail, is it's kind of a subject you started discussing with a couple of people, which is what shape will crime take in a cashless society? And I believe we already have a lot of the cues as to where we will be with that and what shape that will take, because it's something that people are talking about, like, oh, the cashless society. It's very clear that it's being foisted upon people. There's no debate whether or not you will be forced into a cashless society.
No one wants to start discussing some of the secondary elements of it, which is, well, if we're going to have the cashless society, what does that change the nature of crime? Did you think of what crime was in Britain in the 70s and 80s? It was ram raids, it was doing in post offices, it was big stores having their vaults taken out of them, or stuff like that. But that's almost kind of completely gone to the wayside now, because the idea of large stores of cash, or God forbid, actual silver and gold existing in a physical place tied to some business that wasn't a multi-million pound conglomerate was par for the course for a while at least, and now that isn't the case. So if you are the discerning criminal, you can't really go and, burst up the local post office for a couple of grand at the till, because there isn't a couple of grand in the till.
No,
It's
there's.
all tagged on a credit card or debit card thing sent through some Visa link to an imaginary bank that supposedly exists with all this money in it, which actually doesn't.
Even within the kind of the construction sector, I've seen something of a de-emphasis of physical security, both in terms of goods and cash, because businesses seem to believe that they make more money not caring, and they make more money now because there's so little cash on the premises. it doesn't particularly matter. If you get broken into, it will not be a major loss. So some of the thinking around like security and kind of secure rooms in places and even what vaults contain has become different over the years. That's an interesting, slower macro trend.
And there's the further angle as well, which is with all systems of, maybe not necessarily, let's not use the term digital control straight away, but digital finance, you would find that larger amounts of centralization and the economies of scale means that institutions can go about engaging with digital finance in a way that is more secure, is more guaranteed, and that everything's sort of insured to at least some degree. Whereas, you know, an individual who is being moved out of, say, you know, a bank account that used to have money in it, to a bank account that's purely digital, to the only way you now access your money is through your phone, there is no way for you to guarantee the safety of that in the way that, you know, a big store can or a big bank can, or even sort of small businesses to some extent.
Well, we've talked a little bit about kind of the digital future stuff and how basically it's almost impossible to run something like a market stall without cash, really.
Yeah.
Because you have to compete on the same level as like Tesco, and you can't do that. The only way that kind of markets were able to exist in Britain in that sense was because of cash.
And dodging tax.
Yeah, and because of the fact that really, even if you do it legit, you don't earn enough to justify the fee, the transaction fees and the taxation that you would be subjected to. It's kind of a, it used to be a little bit of a, almost like a don't ask, don't tell with the market.
And especially as well, you think, who are the people in our society who normally have larger sums of liquid cash? It is older people who are less technologically advanced.
Yes.
Now, any old person in theory can go out and buy a safe, take 30 grand at the bank, stick it in the safe, and it should be, you know, in theory, you know, that's 30 grand under your watch in a safe that can't be broken into without very extensive work to be had. However, you can't do that anymore. So now you've got to be this sort of doddering 70-year-old who's no longer able to lift cash from the bank and is being told that, oh, well, you see, if you want to manage your money, you've got to have the correct Web3 wallet to integrate with your digital ID so that you can actually access your money from the bank. You know, where's the simplicity of just renting a physical item to store your cash? Now, if you even want to access your money, you've got to understand how to use all these systems.
Well, the big thing as well that I've and many others have pointed out is that the cashless society, in quotes, in terms of notes, in terms of physical money, is basically upon us. I know it's the Sun. Page 3, but not anymore. But the Sun had an article here. Go cash out. The stores that will and won't take your cash revealed as Britain shops move to card-only payments. So technically you are paying with quote-unquote cash. You're paying with currency. You're not paying with digital currency yet. But in terms of the physical note and the type of transaction,
the idea that, you know, you earn a wage, that wage is paid into your bank in the form of, you know, £1,000 and £1 notes.
Yeah.
And then you take that, you take some amount of those notes to another business, you buy products from them, they take those physical notes that you earned, those specific ones, and put them in their own bank.
Yeah.
That's basically impossible now. You cannot, you know, carry notes and specific quantities of physical money through these kind of systems anymore.
Now, before I get to finish this, thank you ASB for the £10 donation. Says regrettably, I cannot attend Nomos, but have a beer on me anyway. Fantastic comment as always. Thank you for that, ASB.
Because if you've mentioned as well before that not only are businesses incentivized not to use cash in certain instances, but as it becomes less and less popular, it becomes more and more expensive.
It's a negative feedback loop.
To actually handle cash as a business. If you were to handle tens and tens of thousands of pounds every month as a business, it wouldn't be a cost. But all of a sudden, if, you know, 2% of your sales are cash, and that's, you've got a couple of hundred quid every month you've got to send to the bank to get sorted. all of a sudden earning that £200-300 becomes worth more, you know, worth less than it's actually worth your time. And you have to turn around and say to people, no cash.
A big part of it is the fact that you don't really have to accept cash anymore. That you can become a cashless store. And as you said, the incentives are there, and it's the incentive structure that is moving us towards this. But it's also an incentive structure that moves us towards, as we were talking about, different types of crime. I just put in context, 80% of London stores that the Sun kind of surveyed here didn't take cash. So London is already basically a cashless city. Although, people, if you've been there, you already know that.
Yeah.
83%, 86% sorry, is very high. That's only 14% that do accept cash. That's at all. That's not 14% that are cash only.
I think we, for the sake of investigative purposes, though,
yeah,
was the person that carried out the survey white? Because I reckon if they were of a different ethnicity, the numbers here would be lower.
Possibly. It's more kind of like as you're casually walking around the city or town sense you're not particularly familiar with.
Yeah.
What will you encounter?
No, I get it.
Which is kind of a, it's an idiot's in a hurry, to use the,
I mean,
the legal
get,
term.
You even get it around here now where shops are putting signs up in their windows saying, you know, contactless preferred.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole thing. This is just something I clipped from the Bank of England a few weeks ago. But they had like a whole thing about, why is the Bank of England looking into the digital pound? Well, the Bank of England introduced digital pound. There was a massive blitz around the idea of the digital pound a few weeks ago. But it is definitely 100% coming. And you will 100% be forced to use it.
Bitcoin, it's here.
Bitcoin. Bitcoin for Brits.
Bonkers.
Brits.
Bonkers. Boris Stormzy, New Britain,
new
Britcoin.
New Britain, new British pounds. Anyway, it's not really a, they're bringing in the digital currency stream, because that's kind of, we already know that's happening, that's passé.
Yes, we're going the level further. If that's the case,
yeah,
then what?
That, yeah, we don't want to normalise, we want to be revelatory. So what is the next step? Well, part of it is the fact that there will be limits. There will be rails put on for normal people about how much digital pounds you can hold. Obviously, it's not to do with crime yet, but I think it is partially in that if you have quote unquote proceeds of crime,
if you have more than £15,000 in your bank account, according to the UK government, you could only want to do that because you were a criminal.
Yes.
Mean, why wouldn't you lend out all your money?
Well, this relates really to something we've discussed before in the stream, which is unexplained wealth orders.
Yes.
Now, the government can come to you and say, account for everything you own. Like, literally, it's not just cash goods. It's like, account for every, like, pen, pencil, and scrap of clothing in your house. Account for every pound in your bank account.
Mm.
And it's not, you know, that's not necessarily the spirit of the law, in quotes, but it is the letter of the law.
Well, think as well the sort of race to the bottom you would get and weird loopholes you would have and how people would reapproach business knowing that, well, I can only have £20,000 there.
Yeah.
You know, maybe long-term plans that would see greater amounts of income and saving over the course of, you know, maybe you would have a business that over 10 years you would earn, say, no money the first three. Then the first 4 years you make like £10,000, and the last 3 years you make £20,000 or £25,000.
Yeah,
there'd be no point in doing that because you would have it taken off you. So you would just start a business that makes money in the first 3 years, and then by the end of the first 3 years, maybe you make £20,000 and you leave it, walk away.
Yes,
you know, we're taking the time horizons that people operate businesses within and shrinking them almost like infinitely small.
Well, the wording here is, we propose a limit between £10,000 and £20,000 per individual as an appropriate balance between managing risks and supporting wide usability of the digital pound. It's very clear here as well that the digital pound will not be for the elite class.
No.
It will not be for the money class. They will store value in different ways. And it's almost a naked admission that the pound is not a store of value.
Hmm.
And it is not meant to be a store of value.
Sorry, I just thought it was...
That's all it is, really.
Hmm.
That's the... money above the cap will be swept into a customer's commercial bank account, given that a digital pound would not be means for storing wealth, he told members. That's weird. Swept into the customer's
at the other end
bank.
You could say I need a little wallet full of internet cash to buy things, so they're still not really sure what way they're wanting to tell us about this. And I think things like introducing the limit amounts or weird token names or structures is really ever more different ways to introduce what's going to be some kind of carbon credit system.
Yes.
Which we'll get towards, I think, at the end more. We'll keep on the front of just digitization for the moment.
Yeah, it talks about the EU here, that the EU is, it's not just Britain, the EU is doing the digital euro.
Mm.
It will have, you know, the same standing and legal status as cash, but you will no longer be able to turn digital pounds into physical pounds like you can the money in your bank account. It is a further delineation and abstraction of your money. But here's something I want to start with, which is we have already seen an increase in quote-unquote cashless crime.
And we'll get to some of the stats on that as we go through.
Yes. But this is one of the cases that stuck out to me, because as soon as you mentioned this pops into my head, in that there's been a case in London of a spate of phones and credit cards being stolen at the same time from lockers. And all of them have been able to spend thousands of pounds sometimes within minutes. And then, you know, whilst this person's exercising, basically. And the initial reaction from the banks and from the kind of the regulator was, you've told someone your PIN code, you've been irresponsible, we're not refunding you. But it kept happening. And then the narrative became, oh, well, maybe these people didn't have proper PIN codes on their phones. And, maybe it's not as secure as we thought.
I hate to interrupt you, but it's just the brain rot on the side of the screen has absolutely grasped me.
What's that?
More snow to sweep UK's Arctic blast hits. Lineker, I'll keep speaking out. Stopping small boats is priority for people. PM.
Yeah, it's snowing. And also there's red meat. Red meat and snow.
There's migrants and... But sorry, you were saying there that essentially the banks had decided our system is faultless, you must be the problem. Well, that can't have happened.
Music in the chat brings up the exact point I was about to bring up, is this happened in the exact same manner when they brought in chip and PIN.
Yeah.
People were defrauded by fake machines, they were defrauded by people getting their PIN codes, which are sometimes stored in plain text. Within like proto banking apps and proto kind of digital banking stuff, they were told that chip and PIN would be absolutely safe, and if money is stolen from you, it is your fault.
I'm sure,
and they had to row back on that.
I'm sure we've all seen the videos, both in the UK and other bits of Europe and America, where people go into like corner shops and like we go and take the rubberized card, you know, hijacking scanner thing off the normal card machine that's there.
Yeah. Here we go. The similarities in each case appear striking. Female victims who have put their belongings in a locker room in a popular chain of gyms only to return and discover their phones and cards have been taken. So it's a specific chain. It's specifically women. And this is probably someone on the inside. Mm-hmm. Like they've probably got some kind of fresh off the boat employees in this chain who are rinsing anyone who goes to them. A number of high-value purchases have been made at the same shops. The thief also treats themselves to a fast food meal. One victim, Elena, had her items stolen from a Virgin gym in Finchley Road last month. The thief spent £10,000 in Harrods at the Covent Garden Apple Store and then tried to spend another £10,000 after Elena had blocked her cards. They used her money for food and taxes and withdrew cash from ATMs and changed the access to her accounts.
Who are these people, like, over £20,000 credit card limits? Well,
there's a lot of them. I've been offered
this is just London people, isn't it?
No. You can get, if you have a half decent credit, you can get a credit card you can spend £20,000 on incredibly easily. As I'm a homeowner,
do not like.
Yes, I'm a homeowner without a mortgage. I get offered stuff like that all the time. And I choose because I choose to basically exist without credit at the moment, but just because of how risky things are with the interest rates.
This reminds me of the one you were talking about, where people carry about like the little chips for contactless stuff on them, and they will basically like walk around, you know, either buses or London Underground or on the platforms at the tube or something, and will basically just brush past people's bags, their wallets, their pockets, have a wee thing on it that pretends it's Transport for London charging you £7, and they'll just go out and do thousands of people's cards in a day.
Yeah, they will.
And most people are completely unaware that it's happening.
Yeah, that's why people use shielded wallets and things like that. The contactless crime is a big thing. I think that's kind of, it's so known about, we don't need to bring it up too much. But what is missed out in this article is the fact that the initial victims were not believed.
Mm.
And the initial victims were, I think one of them was like threatened with like fraud charges. Or
just
like
look
that.
At the fact that one of them saying that the only reason Halifax believe I hadn't written down my PIN was because the thief moved money between my accounts whilst I was on the phone to the bank.
Yeah. So someone somewhere has found a vulnerability in these banking apps.
Mm.
And someone somewhere is able to get into them repeatedly, even without access to, say...
I would imagine if you stole an iPhone and jailbroke it, you could probably get into somebody's bank account pretty easily.
Yeah, well, people, they don't want to acknowledge the fact that these banking apps are not particularly secure. But the point we want to bring forward here is that the more infallible the power structure thinks that their system is, the easier it is to be a victim of crime.
Because generally, the more barriers they put up, the more back doors they leave.
And also, the more infallible they believe it is, the less resources they put towards policing crime, and you are much more likely to be told that you have done something wrong, this is your fault.
Yes.
And it, like I said, it's extraordinary. Because, like I said, the initial wave of this... everyone was told that you've been an idiot, you've written your PIN code down. But they only caught it because it kept happening in such a blatant manner. And it probably is because it kept happening to people who have like NGO and some of them probably Whitehall jobs.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like they're targeting certain neighbourhoods where those people would live.
They'd be targeting young, naive professionals.
Yes, that's, you know...
Bursting into their lockers at Pure Gym and having their stuff raided.
The next one we have here is one that you put in, which is...
No, I think this was your one, actually.
Oh, was it? Yeah. The Chat and Hatter... I don't remember this one, but yeah.
I think this is a similar vein to some of the other ones here. The general notion is that as things are becoming more digital, at least some element of the elites are having to notice that, like, oh, there's more opportunities for cybercrime because we're becoming more dependent on the internet.
Here's the part of this that is... I don't know, former Deputy Director, National Security Programme, Third Way. I don't know. A bit of an odd choice there. If someone told me they were the head of something called Third Way, I'd maybe think they were a third position.
They've got an example here about, I believe it's hospitals in Germany. Yeah. 10th September 2020 in Germany, more than 30 internal servers of the University Hospital of Dusseldorf were hit by a cyber attack, which crippled the hospital's systems and caused emergency patients to be turned away. Amidst the global crisis arising from the COVID-19 pandemic, the hospital was forced to route patients to other facilities for care. German authorities subsequently launched an investigation to determine whether the death of a rerouted patient resulted from delays to her treatment because of the cyber attack. And I said we had the same stuff in the UK about all the ransomware stuff.
Yeah.
And I am aware that to some extent these discussions of ransomware attacks are a way to pivot against like North Korea and Russia. But there is something to be said for, you know, think how dependent we are all now on these massive cyber medical systems. And all it takes is some idiot, like, East African nursing assistant to click on a phishing scam. And all of a sudden, the entire hospital's computer system and records are on... You can't access them.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you've got to turn around to, you know, who knows, hundreds of people in a cancer ward and say, sorry, bye, we'll see you when the computers are working again.
Well, the whole thing here is that the more digitized you become and the more reliant you are made on digital services, the more vulnerable you are.
Mm.
You know, while cybercrime was continuing to increase and transform before COVID-19 crisis, some data now indicates that the pandemic has only made things worse, at least at certain points. Europol noted that a record number of people staying in their homes and relying on even more on the internet for daily activities, including work, education, and leisure, The ways for cybercriminals seeking to exploit emerging opportunities for vulnerabilities have multiplied. According to one study published in March 2020, 88% of US organizations had encouraged or required employees to work remotely.
And to go into something that you have discovered as someone that does a bit of remote work, the way in which very large companies dealing with very important information and they're just sending openly on email or like WeTransfer.
WeTransfer is like an industry standard and it's not secure. I know that for a fact.
But if we go to the next article here, which I think carries an even better example. This is just one from Chatham House to show the fact that they're having to recognise this. So we scroll up to the top where they've got the statistics.
Yeah.
You know, they're talking about criminals use the COVID-19 pandemic to target victims online through impersonation scams, romance fraud and investment scams. UK Finance is calling for new legislation to make online platforms responsible for taking down fraudulent content and better protect consumers from these schemes. In 2020, authorised push payment fraud losses amount to $479 million, up 5% on the previous year. Banks and other finance providers were able to return $206.9 million in losses from APP fraud to victims, over three quarters more than the sum returned in 2019. Fair enough. Almost 7 in every £10 of attempted unauthorised fraud was blocked by the banking industry last year. Unauthorised fraud fell by 5%. To $783.8 million in 2020, with the banking industry stopping $1.6 billion of losses.
Yeah.
Woohoo! Cause to celebrate. But then further down you go, you realise impersonation scams in which criminals impersonate trusted organisations to trick victims into handling over their money almost doubled to nearly 40,000 cases in 2020. So, in the process of digitising labour, digitising consumption, the banks have become more safe,
yes,
more secure, and the average individual is completely at the whims of criminals.
They are less safe and less secure, yes. This is one of the points that I want to put forward, is that it says it right here. Criminals sent fraudulent emails claiming to offer government support to those impacted by the pandemic and scam text messages requesting payments to book a COVID-19 vaccine. They also impersonate delivery companies to exploit the rise in online shopping.
I got an exorbitant amount of those.
Yeah, same.
Fake, you know, Amazon parcels, DPD parcels.
So it happened every time I ordered something via Royal Mail, which makes me think someone who had access to the Royal Mail database was doing it.
Yep.
Because they were doing it to sync up with people actually ordering things. Which is, again, it allows people within these positions and within these organizations to commit fraud with impunity, because it is made so easy and so endemic.
And of course, the answer to all of this,
yeah,
you know, 32% increase in investment scam cases last year, higher than average returns, 38% increase in case of romance scams driven by the rise in online dating during the pandemic. UK Finance is calling for fraud to be included in the scope of the government's online safety bill to better,
yes,
protect consumers from these scams.
Well, the whole point of the digital currency, of the cashless society, is supposedly to make crime harder. But as we've seen with those figures, it really just shifts where crime is. And in many places, and with many vulnerable people, it has made crime easier.
And it's probably only going to get worse as well.
Yes.
I mean, the scary one is when you have the flight to, quote-unquote, real values. When there isn't any cash to nick anymore.
Yeah.
The subset of criminals who aren't sophisticated enough to do digital scams, they're just going to start doing home invasions and taking stuff.
Well, we've already seen that there's been a massive uptick in people being murdered for things like Rolexes. What they'll do is they'll look at people on social media who post high-value items. They'll wait for them to post an identifiable post of their location, and then they'll go and rob them.
I mean, the classic one in this was when cars started to have immobilizers put in them by standard.
Yeah.
What happened was that you no longer had some grubby guy come in with a screwdriver and take your car in the middle of the night. No, they kick your door down at 6:30 when you're having dinner with your kids.
Yeah.
And they demand the keys at knife point. You know, no one likes having anything taken off them, but if you were to be given the choice of having your car just go missing during the night, you know, unbeknownst to yourself, or someone kicking your door down while you're having dinner and threatening your children, it's It's a very different situation.
Well,
and it's one created by companies attempting to make your goods more secure.
The whole thing, and that everyone knows in Britain, that car crime and property crime has exploded over the last 5 years. To the point that the police will no longer send somebody out if you get your car stolen.
Yeah.
That has become like a big sticking point with people. But basically, you are on your own if you are a victim of any kind of property crime. The police have given up on burglaries, given up on car thefts, they've given up on minor assaults, they've given up on basically all kinds of theft.
And then, going to the next link here, which is from City of London Police, who actually run the National Fraud Intelligence Bureau. Action Fraud has received 6,073 reports of coronavirus-related fraud and cybercrime since 1st March 2020. So that was only in a year, because this is from 2 years ago now at this point. City of London Police has arrested 156 criminals.
Oh, you missed that. It's 34.5 million in losses.
And that will be directly to individuals.
Yes.
Data released today by the National Policing Lead for Fraud shows an increase in online shopping fraud, 42%, romance fraud, 20% being committed in the last 7 months compared to, 2019-2020, and a decrease in computer software service fraud. So what, people just didn't pay for fake Adobe, PDF licenses or something that year. If we keep scrolling down, we've got the comment here from City of London Police Commissioner. Past year is incredibly challenging for every single one of us. Sadly, we've seen devious criminals taking advantage of the coronavirus pandemic as a means to commit fraud, often honing in on people's anxieties and the changes that have occurred to their daily lives. Policing has to adapt quickly to what is an ever-changing public health situation, but nothing has stopped us from pursuing these individuals and disrupting their activity. We are committed to protecting the public from fraud and have worked closely with all our partners in law enforcement and the private sector to make arrests, gather evidence, and ultimately bring criminals before the court. I mean, I just think it's interesting that essentially one of the guys who's the head of the National Fraud sort of Bureau for the whole of the UK is coming out and being like, yeah, this is a bit of a disaster, this. We were not prepared for this entire move over to digital consumption. We cannot fight this. I mean, again, everything that's in these articles, we should obviously take with a pinch of salt, and we can presume that they are probably underreporting.
Oh, massively. Well, there's also a case that a lot of people, one, don't want to admit they've been the victim of cybercrime and fraud, because you're always told if you're the victim of this kind of fraud, you are stupid.
Mm.
And the messaging is very, very much, I think, deliberately about the fault of the individual rather than the fault of the criminal.
Mm.
And two, a lot of people also just don't realise that they've been the victims. Like, you talked about the example of the TfL pound.
Yes.
You could have moderate amounts to the tune of maybe £20 taken from you and simply not realise over the course of a day in a city centre. It's probably a lot more common than, again, it's kind of the unknown unknowns factor. We don't know what we don't know. But what all of this emphasises is that during the pandemic, quote-unquote, during the lockdown period, we saw a massive move towards people being forced into digital high-trust situations, in that the messaging was towards the fact that you have to trust these systems and you have to engage with these systems to go about your everyday life. And that was over a temporary period, and that was over almost like a trial process.
Mm.
It wasn't as widespread as the introduction of a full digital currency will be and a full digital ID will be. And it will amplify that massively, as you have to engage with a high trust digital environment on a daily basis. And the opportunities to have something go wrong with a myriad of, we've talked about the attributes, vendors, and someone somewhere along the chain injecting something and effectively being able to steal your entire life, the risk is very, very high for individuals, but the risk is also extremely low for institutions.
Mm.
Because quite simply, if they have a quote-unquote on-chain model, they can just remotely disable that cache. What we're seeing is, and what we'll see is, like he talks about, is property crime, is that there are criminals who will take your details and get hundreds, possibly hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of goods in a short space of time, and then remove those goods from the country very quickly.
Yep. Well, that's, I was about to say, let's now throw the cat in amongst the pigeons, because then you take on the whole other angle of this as well. How about you throw an alien population who can't actually be treated as proper criminals into the equation?
Yes.
And all of a sudden, it turns out that people start having the government for upwards of £16 billion during the coronavirus recovery loans, which I think, even if I remember correctly, in this article, they have to almost basically some people, well, yeah, a large amount of this came from people from foreign businesses or foreign interests. Or
yeah.
And they try and blame it on like a Russia-China kind of thing when it's had absolutely nothing to do with it. And then it's individual immigrants that are doing this.
It comes from people who cannot be held accountable.
Yes.
Because the worst thing that can happen to them is they are deported. That's where a lot of this is coming from. And that's where a lot of the crime came from in terms of fraud for the coronavirus scheme. In that, you, like I said, it's UK lost up to £16 billion due to fraud and error in the COVID loan scheme. Parliament spending watchdog demands Treasury come up with estimates and how much it intends to recover. I think you came up with a figure of maybe this is 20%.
Well, if we go to the next link we've got here, which is some British business website.
Where do they mention the fact that it was foreign interests in here, by the way?
I can't remember if they did or didn't. It might have been a different one at the time I was reading.
Okay. It basically just talking about the fact that, they mention it in here, it's government guaranteed or gave loans worth $129 billion. There it is. So it's roughly...
Well, that's not true, though.
Yeah, right. Is it not?
Well, because this other site seems to be suggesting that it's actually $77
billion. Yeah, right.
Now, could be either or. If it's a $77 billion statistic, we're talking one-fifth of every pound that left the Bank of England for this scheme was fraudulent.
Yeah.
And even if it's $120 billion, it's still over 10%.
You think that number isn't like £16
billion. £16 billion. Yeah. I mean, wasn't a lot of the credit crunch stuff over, you know, financial black holes smaller than that?
Yes. Yes. Things have only inflated in the meantime. They guaranteed loans worth up to $129 billion. But what you're saying here is that $77.5 billion was actually used of that.
It seems to be the case, yes.
Possible amount. Okay. So we've got two competing numbers here, but it's like you said, it's either about 15%, it's 15 to 20% of all coronavirus relief, in quotes, was claimed fraudulently. And a large, yeah. Theodore Agnew dramatically quit his role as a Treasury Minister in a speech in the House of Lords last month after criticising a lack of action to recover stolen
data
money.
Data from government's department's annually report suggested fraud and error losses between 12.4 and 20 billion pounds.
So it could be as high as 20 billion.
Which, if the 77 billion statistic is the correct one, you're talking almost a third at that point.
$4.3 billion write-off straight away. That's it. These are again insane.
So they've decided a quarter of the fraudulent money they're not even going to bother recovering.
Yeah, the furlough scheme is estimated to have suffered the largest fraud and error losses of $5.3 billion, followed by the BBLS, where $4.9 billion is thought to have been lost. Much what the BB is that the business
it's
loan
one of the,
scheme?
It's one of the schemes, yes.
Yeah, the business loan scheme. I believe that was the big one for foreign interest, though. Because a lot of fake businesses got made up by essentially corner shops in London and Birmingham that took hundreds of thousands of pounds each, some of them, and buggered off back to Pakistan. A $5 donation here from Zykson Doppelganger. Punish corporations the same as if they were people. Jail.
Might I suggest we go in a slightly different order and we leave maybe the post office scandal thing to the end and we keep on the tact we're on? Because I think the next one that you...
Yeah, I put that in the wrong order, actually.
Yeah.
There's a big one here as well in the... Let me...
This, I found this amazing, to be honest. Not amazing in a good way, but... that this just existed on like a government website to read? Well,
I've known about this for years, but it's something that isn't talked about, which is there was a huge amount in the 2000s, and still goes on now, of bank loan fraud and vehicle-based fraud by the British Muslim community to fund Islamism.
Mm.
To the point that we have an intelligence review. That this is the July 7 review. This was the review into the July 7 attacks. In preparation for the trial, basically.
Crevice.
Yeah. A full transcript was produced which showed the group received detailed advice from a fraud expert, probably some imam, about raising money fraudulently, selling cars bought on credit, lying about wages in loan applications, skimming credit cards and obtaining and defaulting on bank loans. UDME, I think that's an informant in here,
yeah,
also mentioned that he worked in a school counselling children and that he had to return his Vauxhall Corsa hire car and pick up his repaired car from the garage. So basically they're talking about the fact, it's just kind of casually slipped in here. One of the few sources I can find about this that admits this.
But the people that carried out the 7/7 bombings were able to fund their own operation by engaging in bank fraud.
Well,
and they were
They did this along, they were able to send almost £15,000 ahead of themselves to Afghanistan and Pakistan for their training as well. Like, they were able to both fund their own training, fund overseas terrorist organizations, and then fund a terrorist attack through those means.
Because it's maybe one of the unspoken elements.
Yeah, imam paid by prevent.
I mean, as I have discovered, if you try and apply for universal credit as a British citizen, there is no help for you unless you're like a junkie who has basically a paid up like NGO care worker person assigned to you basically 24/7.
If you're not somebody who is considered disabled or like vulnerable in a legal sense, they basically wound up citizen advice. So there is no help for British people, but there is a huge amount of help for refugees, quote unquote.
But
migrants.
If you put a foot wrong with universal credit as a British citizen,
you
will either be essentially forced to pay back exorbitant sums of money that you'll never be able to recoup, or you'll be put in prison.
Yeah.
However, if you are, say, Mohammed, who's only just arrived here last week, totally honest, Gov, and you get assigned your NGO liaison worker person, then you're sorted. Would you care about claiming the wrong thing or claiming an extra couple of quid a week and universal credit? Because when they come for you, you just run back to the country you come from.
It makes this a huge problem because, as you've said, it's the difference between the supposedly high or supposed to be high trust, high responsibility, permanent members of UK society, in quotes, basically the native British population.
Mm.
And those who exist outside of the system deliberately, in a way that they can take advantage of it. It makes the process that the 7/7 bombers went through even easier, and the potential rewards even bigger.
And this is the case for everything as well. I mean, if I tried to go to, you know, the council run up here and said, oh, give me a council house, they'd be like, no, because you've got family living in this place, you temporarily live at this other address, go chase yourself, you know. Because there's a digital trace of me existing in some form of address. However, again, if I decide to just that, even though I've been living illegally in my mate's house for 3 years when I came over here from Albania, I'm going to go to the local council office or some NGO group and say, I just turned up the other week and I was human trafficked. Can I have a council house, please?
They have to house you by law.
They will give you a council house. You will be able to sublet it. You will sublet it to a Somali family who will turn the living room into a tandoori oven, and you will get away with it. And you'll charge exorbitant amounts of money to that family to sublet that house.
Well, one of the big thing was in the central 2000s, prior to the financial crisis, there was a massive loosening of lending laws and lending practices. And that's what the 7/7 bombers were able to take advantage of.
Hmm.
But as we see now, the large incentive is identity fraud. Now, the incentives as we move towards the quote unquote digital future with digital ID and digital pounds linked to your digital ID is the wholesale theft of personhood.
Yes. Well, it's By being a non-citizen, you have an extra legal status allowing you basically with free rein to commit crimes whilst robbing Social Security for all it's worth. All consumption being centred around digital infrastructure and a limited income expenditure expressed as carbon credits creates a financial prison for British citizens, which would be inescapable once one has a birth certificate. We already see that companies like Monzo, Revolut, or Revolt, or whatever they're calling themselves, you know, we've got to get kids into finance. Barclays are doing adverts about, you know, Dick and Dom coming in, or was Ant and Dick, sorry, coming into schools and talking about crypto and investments and all this kind of stuff. They are pushing bank accounts on the youth, as it were. So we conclude from this that regime wishes to get the digital shackles on us sooner and to make them all the more restrictive. Such a system puts us on the back foot indefinitely as the hosts, a la becoming a minority, to migratory populations who rock up, take all they can from our systems, then move on to the next European nation, leaving us to foot the bill. Now, obviously, this has been going on for decades, but we're now going to end up on a point whereby there is no way out. You know, it's got to a sort of tipping point that we are so dependent and so forced to use all these digital systems that there is no way to fight against this. I mean, that's why some of the people have seen it on Twitter, but I just kind of want to read it out because it's in my mind. This is how I see all this playing out.
Let me just double check something first, but there we go.
You know, the year is 2033. It's Boxing Day, and you've saved up your carbon credits all year to get a turkey. A rare sight these days.
All the rolling bird flues, don't you know?
The family is round, the snow is falling, the lights are on, and the oven is whirring away. Except it isn't. The lights are dimming, the heating is grinding to a halt, the oven clicks off. Tragedy. In a panic, you phone the local carbon credit and energy union. What is the meaning of all this, you cry? A year of only eating soy grits and walking to work, only for your carbon credits to be stolen by a Somali family subletting a London council flat cum tandoori oven who'd managed to scan your digital ID when you took the tube that one time 2 years ago.
Hello, sir. Yes.
Hello, sir.
What do you mean you've run out of carbon? Yeah, we're going to get to a stage where it's like, if you've ever been in like a city centre, I remember when, distinctly remember actually after Nomos London, when me and Panama Hat were sat outside that pub, that there were circuits of people going around, well, junkies going around London, Houston, like, I got a quid, mate, I got a quid, mate. And we saw, it got to the point where like one of them had lapped and they came back round and were like, oh, and they just walked on. And it's going to be like that. It's going to be, you're going to be scammed so often and it's going to happen so much that a scammer's going to get to you and you're going to have nothing left.
Oh, no, you're going to die of some sort of horrendous, you know, like Victorian era style consumption because somebody's bumped your digital ID, NFT, blockchain identity that allows you to use all these systems like your heating and go to the shops and buy food and drive your car and get on the train and go to the bus and do all these things. And that's going to be completely taken away from you because someone scanned your car and used it to heat their bloody weed farm somewhere for 6 months and has put you in an unbelievable carbon credit debt and you're going to get taken off to the climate gulag.
That's where this is all heading, though. And again, the more infallible they view this system, the worse it's going to be. And the slower the responses are going to be, too. If you think that dealing with crime is bad now, like I said, wait until your entire personhood can be taken. Wait until basically your bank account in full can be stolen and taking months and months to rectify it. We have an example of this.
Yeah, this was something you've been wanting to bring up for a while, and I think it sits probably best with this because it's a perfect example of what happens when massive, you know, mass industries attempt to implement systems of, you know, digital data management, and then it doesn't go well. And instead of the people either developing or implementing the software getting put in trouble, instead you end up with decades and decades long criminal investigation that charges hundreds of people that did nothing wrong.
The whole point, well, once you get a system in place that can generate errors, a digital system, once you get the abstraction in place where software is responsible for transactions to the point that it is no longer checked by a human, what you end up with is the British Post Office scandal. And the British Post Office scandal is the biggest single miscarriage of justice in British history. It's affected 555 convictions. 732 prosecutions have been identified as being affected by, 83 convictions have been overturned, and more were expected to be quashed. A number of those affected by the other types of abuse by the post office, torts, breach of contract, coercion, has not been tabulated or published. The prosecutions, civil actions, and extortions resulted in criminal convictions, false confessions, imprisonment, defamation, loss of livelihood, bankruptcy, divorce, and suicide. Basically, what happened is that a company that used to be part of the British government, International Computers Limited, was bought by Fujitsu. And it had been grinding along slowly to create a post office payment and tabulation backend system. Basically, boring finance software. But the boring finance software didn't work. It's a former government kind of entity turned semi-private entity, and it created a disaster. And I'm going to go through this in detail at some point. We don't have time today. Basically, in the face of, like, there's a whole timeline here. In the face of multiple inquiries with dozens of people rotting in prison, and, you know, 700 and odd people have been falsely convicted because of it. Basically, the post office turned around and said, "We don't recognize this as fraud. We don't believe the report."
Mm.
And it's not all been shaken out yet, because the amount of money that was set aside, you can see the timeline here, it's still going.
I think when you mentioned this to me, you were suggesting the fact that the post office at some point did actually admit fault.
Yeah.
And then turned around and said, "Oh, well, sorry, but we can't pay for all your legal fees, even though you're still, you know, wrapped up in a trial about this, despite, you know, us admitting that it's our fault."
Basically, they've only maybe paid about half of what they should have in compensation. The amount that they set aside to compensate victims didn't even match the amount that they fraudulently made people pay back.
Mm.
So the amount of payments that they set aside didn't even match the payments they'd taken off people wrongly by the system generating errors. Like I said, if you want to read it yourself, do go and look it up, because it's an extremely powerful example of trust in software system creating a absolute nightmare that is getting towards being 25 years to resolve this, and it's still not resolved. It is a huge headache. Now imagine the same people being in charge of a digital ID and digital currency system, in which, say, your digital wallet either disappears £100 and they say, "Well, nothing's gone wrong, you're lying," or thousands of pounds appear and then disappear in your bank account 3 or 4 times in a day.
And then you're asked to explain why.
Yeah, and you can't, because, you know, you're an 80-odd-year-old grandmother and you don't understand what's going on.
Someone's in YouTube says this is scheduled for 3/8/23, 1:01 p.m. Doesn't have the live badge and subscription feed. Oh, YouTube.
Well, it's we are live.
Maybe we're not. Ah!
Thank you, Susan. Very cool. But yeah, the post office, the British Post Office scandal again. We could do a whole stream on this on its own. But again, go and look at it yourselves. But it is a massive miscarriage of justice affecting probably over 1,000 people.
Imagine what happens to, I mean, I was going to say bank tellers, but they basically don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
There's going to be so many people when all the Bitcoin, CBDC shit falls through and billions are scammed off of folk every month. People are going to get eaten alive, and the people who have implemented and designed these systems are going to be the last people to get blamed.
Basically, it only really started moving properly in 2021, as you can see here, that the Post Office Horizon IT Inquiry begins taking public impact statements from victims of the Horizon scandal.
Yeah, 2 April 2021, Court of Appeal Criminal Division quashes the convictions in 39 of the 42 Post Office Horizon referrals.
Yep.
Great hit rate, that.
Yeah, the two further convictions are set aside. So there's like one, there's one that they may be pursuing out of all of these people. It's a great example of what happens in the digital future. You have somebody who creates a faulty computer system that is believed over and above human kind of reference for decades.
Chieftain in the chat is asking, what would you recommend to mitigate the consequences of the system? You can't. That's why we're talking about it now, so that at least people can be more prepared for the digital financial raping you're going to receive, because it's like, just how it's going to be.
I mean, unless you actually want to do what we said Glenn Greenwald should have done, and like live in a cave in Wales with like an AK.
Yeah, we're going to go be Tora Bora people.
Yeah, we're going to Tora Bora wasn't real, but we'll make
it. Yeah.
Oh God, the diagrams of Tora Bora. We always end up there somehow. It was real to me, damn it. Tora Bora bunker, you know, massive Dr. Evil cave was real to me. Yeah, return to the woods. That's again, it really is all people can do, because a lot of people are talking about like the front end social impact, the control, all of this, but really it's going to be what we always refer to as the anarcho-tyranny factor.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
as we've discussed, we're going to have a digital green zone that encompasses the banks, government institutions, and the elite class. They will exist.
They'll have their financial digital castle.
Yes. And outside of that will be everyone else who is subject to all these different kinds of fraud, all these different kinds of error. I actually believe that the biggest headache in all of this will be fraudulent accusations due to computer error.
Yes.
That will be, as we saw at the post, that will be, I think, the biggest immediate impact of the digital future will be tens of thousands, possibly even hundreds of thousands of people ending up being fined or ending up, you know, with court summons or even ending up in prison because of a software error, because of something that they are not responsible for and had no knowledge of. But over and above that, the longer term is going to be the fact that you're going to have a class of criminal who is foreign. They claim to be under 18 and they have no prior history, at least in terms of the security services are concerned, in the UK, committing large, essentially smash and grab crimes using stolen identities.
Well, they're also disabled and they require a phone, so they have all the necessary equipment required to, as you say, engage in like some sort of organized smash and grab operation and then take their mobility vehicle outside of the country and go sell it in Albania or something.
Yes. I do not think that the current order is accounting for this. I think this is actually a blind spot issue. For them is that they do not understand that they do not exist in a closed system.
Could we maybe finish with the rather glorious video from one of the few nations that maybe does exist close to such a deep level of anarcho-tyranny? I believe that's the one I put in the telegram of the people bumping the solar panels.
I don't have that to hand, so.
It'll be in the Discord.
I'm not sure where that is.
It's in the stream resources section.
Oh no, we're doing live switching.
Sorry, I should have.
Don't do this.
I should have put it in the thing.
Scrolling. What? Oh, of course it would open there. Here we go. Here's one of.
I just find something deeply funny about this.
I believe this is South Africa.
It is, yes. Here you are. Here's all your carbon credits you saved up for being walked out of your front drive.
Yeah, let me switch that quick. I'm just trying to make sure it actually shows up. There we go. I'm trying to make sure it actually shows up full screen. There we go.
You're now going to have to put like barbed wire and rat poison all over your solar panels to stop them getting nicked. I just love this clip. It's so good.
We got them on their heads as well. Like the big jar of water.
I don't know. Part of me thinks bumping solar panels off shit-lib cosmopolitan homes is quite based.
Well, but again, we're not even getting into the realms of like weird AI stuff here. We're just getting into good old-fashioned like threadbare incompetence. Lovely. Anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. I hope you guys enjoyed this slightly different look at the digital future.
Yeah, I think this is probably a subject we'll definitely come back to at some point. I think we just wanted to like get the brief first discussion of this notion out there that crime in and of itself follows developments and resources and finance, and when you turn around and digitize the entire economy and people's methods of consumption, you create infinite new avenues for crime.
Yes. Prepare for unforeseen consequences. There we go.